With Russia's economy in decline since 2008, plus the international sanctions and low oil prices, many political economists, like Stacy Clausen with the Kenan Institute, are surprised that President Vladimir Putin's government remains stable and reportedly popular among Russian citizens. Today on the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour, perspectives from Russian scholars with the Wilson Center's Kenan Institute on the future of U.S.-Russian relations and thinking beyond Trump and Putin. That's coming up, but first, this news. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Ross Chambliss. Today on the program, a conversation about the future of U.S.-Russian relations and thinking beyond Trump and Putin. Back in February, the Hinckley Institute of Politics hosted two representatives affiliated with the Kenan Institute, which is a division of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, a think tank based in Washington, D.C. The Kenan Institute is committed to improving American understanding of Russia and the successor states of the Soviet Union. And speaking today are two scholars from the Kenan Institute. Sergei Parkamenko is a Russian journalist, publisher, and a founder of several projects aimed at developing civic activism and promoting liberal values in Russia. Parkamenko founded Russia's first news magazine, called Itogi, which means summing up in Russian, in 1996, which was published in cooperation with Newsweek magazine. He later launched a new news magazine called the Yeznedelny Journal, or Weekly Magazine, and he was its editor-in-chief until 2003. Sergei Parkamenko was one of the leading figures of Russia's civic protest movement from 2011 to 2013, and he was a part of the elected Russian Opposition Coordination Council and was instrumental in organizing mass rallies in Moscow in the winter of 2011. Parkamenko also initiated mass lawsuits against government election fraud, which resulted in a court ruling that said Russian voters should be allowed to appeal election results directly. Parkamenko is currently a public policy fellow at the Kenan Institute. And also speaking today is Stacy Clausen, a global fellow at the Kenan Institute and former assistant professor at the Patterson School of Diplomacy and International Commerce at the University of Kentucky. Clausen worked in the U.S. Department of Defense as a political military analyst and was named an emerging leader in environmental and energy policy by the Atlantic Council. Dr. Stacy Clausen currently researches global energy security, Russia-China relations, and Arctic security. This event was co-sponsored by the Salt Lake City Committee on Foreign Relations and the Kenan Institute at the Wilson Center, and it was recorded on February 7th. Here is Stacy Clausen.
To go to Russia. All of you, fantastic. said that the Soviet government structure prevented objective or accurate pictures of internal and external reality. Now, this then led to strategic thinking within the U.S. government, and there was this famous article published in Foreign Affairs called X. And if you haven't read it, I recommend that you get it. And it was a policy that called for containment of the USSR, and that's where this idea is coming back in vogue. Contain. Should we contain modern Russia? And what does containment look like? Containment in that article meant stopping the spread of Soviet influence. And during the Cold War, that included the globe, Africa, Korea, China, Vietnam, Eastern Europe. And the U.S. and Europe built up what they called a cordon sanitaire of states, sort of a curtain of states, to contain the Soviet Union from moving into Western Europe. So it very much mirrors what's happening right now as we look to the Baltic states, as we look to the Balkan states, as we decide what to do with Ukraine in terms of continuing sanctions on Ukraine as a result of territorial violations and sovereignty. So I'll stop it there and hear from my colleague, Sergei.
Thank you very much, Kargas. I will start firstly by apologizing for myself and my broken English because of I started to try to speak English just a few months ago. If you have 52 years, it's not so easy to learn a brand new language. But I will try. What is understanding Russia now? Second long telegram, maybe not so long. What was it? What was the most important word in this telegram? I believe it must be all this exists in the paper in Russia, but nothing exists, or practically nothing exists in the today's practically political life in Russia. So it is very, very difficult for Russia, for example, to understand what happened now, these days. Another power of the country. I have a very tragic example. A few years ago in Russia was passed a rule. It was a ban of adoption of Russian children by American families. It was a reaction to Magnitsky List. Magnitsky List is a American law who install some personal sanction against some Russian politicians and law enforcement officers and police officers, judges. So, to respond to this American Magnitsky List, Russian Parliament State Duma adopt what this ban to adopting of Russian children. And the pretext, the explanation of this ban was United States is unable to guarantee rights of our Russian children in the United States. United States is unable to guarantee inspection of Russian diplomats all around the United States, all in these families. Because the United States told some strange fairy tale about state legislation. It's not true. It's not exist. It's not possible to have a different state legislation in different state and different rules about adopted children. It's not true. It's just a joke. Just a cheat. So it was a propagandist explanation of this law, and it is true. It is very difficult for Russia to understand the United States and the United States system of checks and balances and the United States system of federalism. But it's also difficult for Americans to understand Russian. Russian politics, when many institutions exist on the paper, but absolutely don't exist in the reality. So maybe the question it was must more common for us. Thank you very much.
And that's Sergei Parkamenko. He's a Russian journalist and publisher and the founder of several civic projects aimed at developing a more open democracy that promotes liberal values in Russia. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
Welcome back to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. On this program, we record and broadcast the many engaging lectures, debates, and panel discussions held at the Hinckley Institute of Politics every spring and fall, and we replay them as a public service. And today we are airing a conversation about the future of U.S.-Russian relations. Two scholars from the Kenan Institute, a division of the Wilson Center think tank that's based in Washington, presented their views on the current state of relations between the United States and Russia. Sergei Parkamenko is a Russian journalist and publisher and a liberal democratic activist, and Stacey Clausen is a global fellow at the Kenan Institute and a former assistant professor at the Patterson School of Diplomacy and International Commerce at the University of Kentucky. The two took questions from the audience.
Fairly recently, Putin has
President Putin have 2 terms as president, then 1 term as prime minister, two terms as president, one term as prime minister, and so on, all his life. So, legally, he don't have a right to be president, but in practice, he will be president. And now, all President Putin made is a preparation for this election. This election will be in 2018, just one year. And he changed her entourage, her team. This team was created mostly by old friend of President Putin. And we have some strange nomination, cooperative order, late cooperative. What is it? Is it a compound of small country homes, not far from St. Petersburg? This compound was created by some officers of KGB in 1970. And most of big persons and influential persons of Putin's team was members in this compound of country homes. So now this generation is revolved by President Putin, and a new generation of young and young technocrats is coming on the power of Russia. It's a normal idea of almost all dictators of the world. Mao Zedong or Stalin made just the same operation two or three times during his career. And it is a time to make just the same for Putin. It's a change of political generation in entourage of Putin, because Putin want alone all the people having our own political influence, our own political base, our own political power, and be
encircled.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. And be encircled by young people who have nothing except the support of Putin personally. It's absolutely typical way for all dictators of the world. These people is responsible only before Putin personally, and only because of Putin he is on the power.
Yeah, I would agree with Sergei, but I would add that some Kremlin watchers have been taking notice of potential competitors, and for example, the new speaker of the Duma, or the mayor of Moscow Oblast, you know, the Moscow region. Some regional governors are asking for more authority from Tatarstan, for example, more authority over the budget. I think that this move, and I don't know, Sergei, if you agree with me, but I see this move and the fact that he supposedly made the head of his bodyguard the head of the new National Security Service, right? These aren't technocrats. These aren't
name's Jacob Argy. I'm an economics major here. Just wondering, what's the time scale? Like, when do we get out of this sort of, like, Putin-dominated Russia? Is it feasible to become the federalist state that's on paper?
If I could just start with that. And then I don't know a timetable, but I'm a political economist. And what's interesting to me is watching the decline of the economy and being surprised that a president and his government can survive this. Because Russia has fallen harder than any G20 country since 2008 in perpetual decline. It's in a negative growth rate.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. Today we're airing a conversation recorded back in February about the future of U.S.-Russian relations and thinking beyond Trump and Putin. Two scholars on Russia from the Kenan Institute, a division of the Wilson Center think tank, gave their views on the current state of Russia and Vladimir Putin's government. Kenan Institute public policy fellow Sergei Parkamenko is a Russian journalist and a publisher and a democratic activist. And Stacey Clausen is a global fellow at the Kenan Institute, and she's a former assistant professor at the Patterson School of Diplomacy and International Commerce at the University of Kentucky. And the two of them took questions from an audience of faculty and students at the University of Utah.
Sanctions regime are up. The Slovaks and the Cypriots Arctic is one area, but we're part of a council. We're part of a seven-nation council. There may be areas for cooperation. The area that concerns me the most, though, probably, in addition to Ukraine, is arms control. Arms control has always been, if you've read Angela Stent's book, Limits of Partnership, sort of the reset. When you press the reset button with Russia, you go arms control. And arms control is the first thing you do to find common ground. And so Obama administration had New Start. New START is up for renewal in 2018 by simple congressional renewal. So it wouldn't take a renegotiation. 2021, it expires. So if the Trump administration wanted to have a win, it could be arms control. The problem is that, again, President Trump has lumped in arms control with Ukrainian sanctions, somehow saying that we'll have, let's make arms control part of a grand bargain. We've never done arms control as part of a grand bargain. We've always done it separate. It's always been a separate space. You remember that famous picture of Gorbachev and President Reagan at the White House signing the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Agreement in 1987. So despite everything else going on, it's the height of the Cold War, right? Besides everything else going on, you have an arms control agreement signed. And so it'll be interesting to watch whether the Trump administration is able to separate all of these pieces and take advantage of where you can have some triumphs or some successes, I would say.
Seemed at first that there was a patriotic surge. Russia was being a big power again, and people were proud. But it seems that the polls indicate that that support is eroding a bit at home. But in Syria itself, it looks to me anyway that Russia is poised to broker a peace
well, these are Swedes. So, it's very strange for Russia. So, normally, Russia have to go away from Syria. But it's... I recall another response. It's maybe just one thing to buy, to sell. So, it's a very contradictory situation.
and like the stationing of forces in Europe, the conventional forces of Europe treaty. So I would not want to create alarmism, but I think we're in a very fragile period in U.S.-Russia arms control nonproliferation. What is the Russians haven't changed as far as I know. They don't change. I mean, personnel. We've done an entire swap out. The people with the most knowledge on these issues and personal relations with Russia are no longer in the State Department as of a couple weeks ago. And so I feel like we're in a situation where we're going to have to quickly, the United States quickly ramp up whatever expertise we have and get to the table with the Russians on this issue. Again, and try to separate it from everything else, is what I would say.
Many people close to President Trump said already, very interesting to me, about Reagan ideas, Reagan schools, and Reagan heritage in these matters of arms control. And this is true. Reagan invented last and absolute tactics, success in arms control is a result of economic pressure. Lowest price of oil, easiest is conversation with Soviet or with Russians about arms control. So, many people of this administration speak about this. But the problem is who pressed the button? Not only who pressed the button. The last moment of this game. So it's true, it's quite possible to press Russians, to press President Putin, to press Russian leaders to set to abandon, to accept many things in the arms control. But the final moment is very dangerous. It's very dramatic. Because if one day Russia understands himself as a loser, it's Russia press the button, not a winner in the United States. This is a paradox of this
Well, thank you so much. That concludes our Hinckley Forum. So please join me in thanking Dr. Stacey Wilson and Sergey for an interesting
This has been a forum titled The Future of U.S.-Russian Relations, Thinking Beyond Trump and Putin. Sergei Perkamenko is a Russian journalist and publisher and democratic activist, along with Stacey Clausen, who are both research fellows with the Kenan Institute, a division of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. This conversation was recorded on February 17th. This program is made possible in part by the Hinckley Institute's Wayne Owens Fund. I'm Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.